Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I am thrilled to be welcoming back author, historian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Rob Schneider. Hi, Rob.
Hello, Donald. How you doing?
I'm good. Happy holiday season. Rob is the author of Queer Musicals, part of the Essential Musicals series of books from Methuen imprint of Bloomsbury Publishing. Rob was on the show several weeks ago talking about queer musicals, which I highly recommend, and it makes a wonderful holiday gift for friends and family or for yourself.
Bless you, Donald.
Yes.
Bless you. What great stocking stuffers.
It is a wonderful, wonderful stocking stuffer. But Rob is back because, one, he wanted to talk a little bit about queer musicals again, but also he's back because I gave him the homework assignment of doing his 12 favorite show tunes, and he was up to the task. So we are going to dive right in. We'll do the first six, and then we'll chat a little bit more about queer musicals and what the response has been since it came out. And then we'll tackle the next six. So where are we going to start with your 12 favorite show tunes?
Well, first, Donald, I have to say thank you so much for having me on. This is for a show queen like myself, and I use that term very proudly and affectionately. this was a hard assignment. Pick your favorite 12, and tomorrow I might have a whole other new favorite 12.
Right.
But we are going to start where I think every good musical should start, and that is an overture. Mm-hmm. And we are going to play one of my favorite overtures. Now, Donald, can I ask you, what is your favorite musical theater overture?
That's a really good question. I don't know that I have a specific one.
Great.
I like a lot of the classics, but I do like, there's a lot of kind of obscure ones that I kind of like that I think are really good, that are really interesting. To me, the overture is always important because it's got to showcase the show really well. It's got to showcase the songs from the show really well, but it also has to be put together really well. A really bad overture is one where it kind of like jarringly goes from song to song and you're like, oh my God, this isn't really blending very well. The transitions between the songs is like really jarring. So, I mean, for example, I like the overture to Rags. I like the overture.
Yeah.
I really like the overture. I mean, some of the flop overtures I like. I like Dance a Little Closer. The overture is really beautiful for that. But of the big ones, I don't know. I love On the 20th Century. I love...
too.
You know, I mean, I love some of the big ones. I mean, obviously things like Gypsy is a very famous overture.
Of course.
And I will tell you, of the many, many people who have been on doing their 12 favorite show tunes, you are the first person to ever pick an overture.
I am honored. Well, I feel I want there to be an arc to all of this. So I wanted to start with an overture. And yes, Gypsy and I think Carousel and Mac and Mabel and On the 20th Century, they are always like at the top of the list. And then there's one that I always feel should be included. It's this song that I put on if I'm not in the best mood. And it just cheers me up. And this is the overture from the 1971 revival of No, No, Nanette that was constructed by the great Ralph Burns. Orchestrator and the wonderful Luther Henderson and Buster Davis. And together, these three great individuals created, to me, one of the best overtures. And like you said, it has to set the scene really well. And just from the opening chords, there's a sense of excitement, anticipation, and then a big burst of joy. So I'd like to start with the joyful 1971 revival overture from No, No, Nanette.
So we just heard the overture from No No Nanette from 1971 from the revival. And one of the things we always have to remind people is that even though there may be a composer who writes the score for these musicals, the overtures are rarely ever put together by the actual composer. They're usually put together by whoever does the orchestrations. There's some input by the composer, but usually they hand off everything to the orchestrator and they put together the overture. And so we have a lot of people like Sid Raymond, who did the overtures for Julie Stein, because the Julie Stein overtures, like Funny Girl and Gypsy and things like that, are just classics. But Julie Stein didn't put those together. You know, it was the orchestrator who did those. So where are we going next?
Before we do, I should say, I forgot to acknowledge the composer of No No Nanette, whose melodies we did hear, and that's the great Vincent Humans.
Yeah.
So those three other guys would have nothing if it wasn't for Vincent Humans. The next place that we're going is, I love cult musicals. I love musicals that might be off the beaten path, that everyone might not be familiar with. And this is an opening number that has to set the entire scene for the audience. My favorite opening numbers are anything that Aarons and Flaherty do. You know, Ragtime and My Favorite Year, they set everything so perfectly. But I decided to expose, hopefully, the listeners to a show they might not be all that familiar with. It's a 1986 musical that was called A Brownstone. And it had music by Josh Rubens, Andrew Cadiff, and Peter Larson. Brownstone only ran for a couple of performances off Broadway. It's a story of a year in the life of five people who live in the same brownstone in New York City. And the opening number to me introduces you not only to all of their characters and all of their problems, but captures the neurosis of living in the city, I think, so well. The original cast did not get a cast album. And the original cast was like Rex Smith and Liz Callaway. I mean, that's a pretty great cast right there. And then in 2003, Original Cast Records decided to do an all-star version of it with Brian D'Arcy James and Rebecca Luker and Debbie Gravett, Liz Callaway again. You're going to be hearing all of these people on this. But this is the opening number from the musical Brownstone called Someone's Moving In.
Someone moving out? Is someone moving in? Is someone about to begin all over again?
Someone's moving in. Someone's moving out.
Someone's beginning to doubt if they can see that vacancy ever becoming a home.
Can they take that naked space and make it a place of their own? Someone's moving in.
Someone signed a lease.
Someone's unpacking their life piece by piece.
Someone's found a place. Someone's found a place to stay.
Those people move out.
Never saw them go.
We never see who's moving.
It's nothing to worry about. When the name on the mailbox changes, we'll know.
Someone's moving in. They might have a kid. Someone's making keys.
Babies, God forbid.
Someone's been spending the in the knees. Someone's settling down.
Just like we did.
Someone's muddling through.
Just like we did.
Someone's the owner of two dark rooms with a view of nothing that you would care to see.
Someone's starting cold.
Someone's breaking free.
Someone's as bold as can
fuck was that? Someone just blew up the second floor. Who was it? What does it matter? There's millions of noises to wake you up. 10 million noisy neighbors in this town. But who's counting? Somebody's moving out, I guess. Hello and goodbye. What's one neighbor more or less when there's such a large supply? There's millions of people just down the hall. 10 million nameless neighbors in this town.
What a city! Where the future possibilities are infinite, and there they sit like open doors. All those open doors, with somebody saying that one's yours.
Are they moving to the country? Oh, it's quiet in the country, and they all move to a place where the breathing is
someone's
free and clear. I stick
in.
Around and choke. They've got a ticket
someone's
out of here. I've got
today.
A subway token. Please take me with you
someone's
if you can. Lend me your courage. All I do is plan for the country.
For the
country.
City.
Where the people live in houses and the neighbors come around and walk through open doors.
Will I ever find those
open doors? Open doors
with somebody saying that one's yours. In the city.
In the country.
You're here to stay. Well, hey, hey, hey. This time I hear you're here for good, or so I understood you to say. But why should I believe you this time? Why should I believe you when deep inside I know you always lie? You always lie. So as of today, this girl is safe. Talk.
We can talk tonight. In a minute you'll have to go. Or call me at lunch.
No, tonight's all right, as long as the subject is open.
This time I hear you've changed your
we
style.
We need a change.
Well, I'll just smile.
But when you smile, I can't get angry.
This time you want to settle down.
Can't seem to settle down.
You say you'll be in town for a while.
There's lots of time.
There's not much time.
But why should I believe you this time?
Why should we be losing time?
Why should I believe you? When deep inside I know you always lie. You think the doors are always open.
It's easy, never seems to listen.
You think it's cool
where
to come and go.
Where are those open doors?
I've got no room to spare.
Where are
do
doors?
Not know, don't you dare.
Where are
don't
doors?
Come around, cause there are no more open doors. Go find someone else's
open doors.
Someone's moving in. Someone's here at last. Somehow it took me so long, but it happened so fast. Someone's moving
it's
in.
Not a brand new town. Someone's all at sea. Someone's moving in.
Is it suddenly
a shadow?
So I am sensing a theme here in that we are kind of working our way through how a show is structured. We start with an overture and then we had an opening number. And the opening number we heard was from the musical Brownstone, which I also love the score for Brownstone. I have the original cast label CD.
Oh my God.
Yeah, which is where that track came from, which was Kevin Reed, Brian Darcy James, Rebecca Luker, Debbie Gravett, and Liz Calloway. How can you even beat that lineup of performers? It's like amazing,
right?
Amazing doing Someone's Moving In. So what is next? We're tackling Rob Schneider's 12 favorite show tunes, and we are now up to his third pick,
which is an Aaronson Flaherty song, because usually the second or third song in a musical is the I Want song, where a character, it's so wonderful in a play, you have to figure out through all the talking what their objective is. Musical's great. They just come out right at the beginning and they sing it at you. So I think that's fantastic. And to me, there's one that is so exciting to me. It actually makes me feel like I'm levitating when I'm either listening to the album or I'm seeing it in the theater. And that's from the brilliant Aaronson Flaherty musical, Once on This Island. And it's Timon's song, Waiting for Life to Begin. Between LaChanze's performance and these orchestrations, you can't get any better. And so to me, this is a fantastic I Want song. So this is LaChanze with Once on This Island's Waiting for Life to Begin.
A stranger in white, in a car, racing by. Oh gods, are you there? What can I do to get you to look down and give in? Oh gods, hear my prayer. I'm here in the field with my feet on the ground and my face in the air, waiting for life to begin.
That's also one of my favorite I Want songs. I saw the original production.
Did you really?
Yeah. It's one of my favorite. It was one of my favorite experiences just because I was completely unfamiliar with Aaron's and Flaherty, obviously, at that point. And I went into the show not knowing at all what to expect and absolutely fell in love with the show. It's such a wonderful show. And then when the revival happened a few years ago, I was thrilled that the revival happened. And I was thrilled that the revival won the Tony for Best Revival. Because it's sort of like the show came and it was kind of overshadowed by much bigger shows on Broadway that season, even though it was a Tony nominee for Best Musical.
Yeah.
But it was kind of overshadowed by the big Broadway shows that season. And I was kind of thrilled that somebody brought it back and revived it. And it's now become a bit of a mainstay with some of the regional theaters around the country. So, and it does get produced now, which is good.
Oh yeah, it's so moving. And what I love about them more than anything is that no show of theirs sounds alike. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you can say there's an error. I mean, I'll be honest with you, and that's not in a pejorative, but you can figure out a Jerry Herman song. You can figure out a Sondheim or a Rodgers and Hammerstein. You just can. Mm-hmm. But what I love about Aaron's and Flaherty is that they immerse themselves so much into the world that nothing feels thematically linked from show to show.
Right. Yeah, they remind me of Aaron's and Flaherty, and it's going to be a weird comparison, but I agree with you in the sense that their shows are all so different thematically and sound-wise that they're sort of very similar to me to Jeanine Tesori.
Mm.
Because Jeanine Tesori is also similar in the sense that her shows are all very different, from Thoroughly Modern Millie to Fun Home to, I mean, everything sounds different with Jeanine Tesori to Violet. They're all very different types of scores. Which I like, because I like the versatility that they show.
Me too. I mean, I don't know if any artist wants to be told they have, like, you know, a motif or theme that runs through their work, because they feel like they want to be as individualistic as possible. Mm-hmm. But Aaron's and Flaherty really, really are, it's unrecognizable from show to show. I just went to a concert of their work here up in the city, and every song that was presented did not sound like anything else in that evening, but it was all connected by the same two artists. And so I wanted to make sure that they got included on this particular list.
Yes. And they're certainly back in the spotlight with the revival of Ragtime.
Yes.
Playing at the Beaumont at Lincoln Center. So that's also a big deal on Broadway right now. So where are we going with your fourth pick?
My fourth pick is also, if it's not an I Want song, it's an I Am song, where the character tells us what their personality is. And so that way we have a very strong sense of who they are throughout the rest of the show. And I think Aaron's and Flaherty are on their way to having the longest partnership, I believe, in Broadway history in terms of songwriting. But before them, there was the great Betty Comden, Adolph Green. And as lyricists, I'm like, you can't beat that New York sophistication. So this is actually from their 1953 Tony Award-winning musical, Wonderful Town, sung by the great Rosalind Russell. And I'm using the word sung in quotation marks. and that's okay. That's okay. And what I love about this song, which is called 100 Easy Ways to Lose a Man, is that this is a song that still gets laughs today, 70 years later after its debut. The character of Ruth is not the luckiest in love. She's too academic. She's too cerebral. And men find that threatening. But she has a great self-deprecating sense of humor about it. And Comden and Green always gave credit to Rosalind Russell for this. There was another song in this place called The Story of My Life, which was a little, you know, ballady and a little depressing. And I think you can actually hear it on Sally Mays's Just in Time album? Our Private World album.
Yeah.
She sings it and she sounds gorgeous on it. But Rosalind Russell was like, I don't want that. I want a song where it goes, da-da-da-da-da-da, punchline. Da-da-da-da-da-da, punchline. And they gave her that, and it's still working today. So this is the great Rosalind Russell from Comden and Green and Leonard Bernstein's Wonderful Town with the I Am song, 100 Easy Ways to Lose a Man.
The first way to lose a man, you've met a charming fellow and you're out for a spin. The motor fails and he just wears a helpless grin. don't bat your eyes and say, what a romantic spot we're in. Just leap out, crawl into the car, say it's the gasket, and fix it in 2 seconds flat with a bobby pin. That's a good way to lose a man. He takes you to a baseball game, you sit knee to knee. He says the next man up at bat will bunt, you'll see. Don't say, oh, what's a bunt? This game's too hard for little me. Just say, bunt, are you nuts? With one out, two men on base, and a left-handed batter coming up, he'll walk right into a triple play, the same as in the fifth game of the World Series in 1923. That's a sure way to lose a man. A sure, 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 sure way to lose a man. A splendid way to lose a man. Just throw your knowledge in his face. He'll never try for second base. 98 ways to go. The third way to lose a man. The lifeguard at the beach that all the girlies adore swims bravely out to save you through the ocean's roar. Don't say, oh, thanks, I would have drowned in just 1 second more. Just push his head under and yell, last one in is a rotten egg, and race him back to shore. That's a swell way to lose a man. You found your perfect mate, and it's been love from the start. He whispers, you're the one to whom I give my heart. Don't say I love you too, my dear. Let's never, never part. Just say I'm afraid you've made a grammatical error. It isn't to who I give my heart, it's to whom I give my heart. You see, with the preposition to, who becomes the indirect object, which makes use of whom absolutely imperative, which I can prove to you with this very simple chart. That's a fine way to lose a man. A fine, 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 fine way to lose a man. A dandy way to lose a man. Just be as well informed as he. You'll never hear, oh, promise me. Just tell him where his grammar errs. Then mark your towels, hers and hers. Yes, girls, you too can lose your man if you will use Ruth Sherwood's plan. 100 easy ways to lose a man.
That is like the perfect, one of the most perfect character songs ever written.
Isn't it so good?
It is. It's so classic. And it's, the nice thing is that even though it was written for Rosalind Russell, I've seen so many different actresses perform it in productions, Wonderful Town, and it works. That's the sign of a good show tune. It works regardless, and it works so, because it works perfectly for the character. It is written so perfectly for Ruth and the character that regardless of who's singing it or performing it, it's the perfect character song, and it's a perfect way to introduce your character.
Oh, it's incredible. And like, you know, Lehman Engel in his book about what makes a successful musical, he says complaints are always, audiences will sympathize more if a complaint is done in a humorous way and in a self-deprecating way. And he always uses Adelaide's Lament. Mm-hmm. As the example of that, but I think 100 easy ways should also be thrown into that. If you can't get Adelaide's Lament, head on over and get 100
exactly.
easy ways.
Exactly. Okay. We're now up to number 5. Although these are not ranked in any particular order.
No.
What is number 5 that we're going to hear?
Number 5 is such an anomaly to me, and it's so unique, and I really wanted to make sure that it got included. There was the great composer Cy Coleman, who did so many wonderful musicals, from Barnum to Little Me, City of Angels, the list goes on and on and on. But in 1973, he wrote a musical with the great Dorothy Fields called Seesaw, in which our leading character sings a song called Nobody Does It Like Me, which is another I Am song about how unlucky she is in love. And then 20 years later, Cy Coleman wrote another song called You Can Always Count on Me with the great lyricist David Zippel. And it is amazing that even though 20 years earlier, there were lyrics by Dorothy Fields, and then 20 years later, lyrics by David Zippel, and Cy Coleman is the connective tissue. The songs are so beautifully parallel to one another that you could make, if you wanted to, an amazing mashup of it. And in the 90s, the great Tony Award winner Randy Graff, on her Cy Coleman album, You Fascinate Me So, created something called the Codependency Duet, where she has married the song from Seesaw and the song from City of Angels together. And to me, it's just a great example, not only of Cy Coleman's brilliance as a composer, but Dorothy Fields and David Zippel's great, great work. I think Dorothy Fields should be talked about much, much more in the grand scheme of things. And so anytime I get a chance to show off her work, I am more than happy to do so. So this is from Randy Graff's amazing album, You Fascinate Me So, the Codependency Duet.
I've got a big loud mouth. I'm always talking much too free. If you go for tact and manners, better stay away from me. If there's a wrong way to get a guy, the right way to lose a guy. I don't need a map, I naturally head for the dead end street. You can always count on me. I'm caught in a trap, when joy is approaching, then I retreat. I'm at home with misery. I've been the other woman since my puberty began. The junior prom and met the only married man. I'm always on tap for romance or chocolate that's bittersweet. You can always count on me. If there's a wrong way to say it, a wrong way to play it, nobody does it like me. If there's a wrong way to do it, a right way to screw it up, what I sound like is a fraud. If there's a wrong way to keep it cool, a right way to be a fool, nobody does it like me. I go for the riffraff who's treating me so-so. When I can't play the second fiddle, I'm a virtuoso. I should be playing for a wedding band, but there are no wedding rings attached. It up. Nobody does it like me. I choose the kind who cannot introduce the girl he's with. There are lots of smirking motel clerks who call me Mrs. Smith, but I've made a name with any psychiatrist who explores chronic codependence. I swallowed my gum. Me!
We just heard Tony Award winner Randy Graff, who got her Tony Award for City of Angels, singing a City of Angels song paired with a Seesaw song, both by Cy Coleman. And I agree with you about Dorothy Fields, one of the most amazing lyricists, writers, from theater, who had a career that spanned from the 1920s all the way into the 1970s and missed a beat. I mean, she did. I mean, the shows that she did, if you listed them, are, and the songs that she worked on are just amazing. Amazing.
And what I've always loved about her is that as times changed, so did her vocabulary as a lyricist.
Yeah.
So it always sounded of the time. And that's not easy to do. And I just like, I just wish she would be celebrated more because I just think she's so marvelous.
Yeah. Many, many years ago here in LA, somebody did a little review show of Dorothy Fields called Dorothy Who. Because people obviously were not that familiar with her. And they literally did a whole review show with, I think it was a cast of like five. And they did a musical review called Dorothy Who. It was all Dorothy Fields songs, all the way back from the 1920s, all the way through Sweet Charity and Seesaw. And it was very fun, very cute. I mean, it didn't really go anywhere, but it was really, really cute and well put together.
Hey, anything to get her work out there?
Yeah.
I mean, God, don't quote me on this. I feel like she was the first woman to win an Oscar for a song comp, best song, The Way You Look Tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because that was her and Jerome Kern, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
so I just wish you'd be celebrated more. So thanks for indulging me.
Yeah. Just to kind of link it all together, your editor on the Essential Musicals series, Kristen Stoltz Presley, has a book. Her previous book is all about Dorothy Fields.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Broadway.
She has a book that she wrote on Dorothy Fields. So if people want to read that book, they can read all about Dorothy Fields if they find her book. So we're almost at the halfway point. So what is your sixth pick?
This one makes me so happy because I teach musical theater history quite often. And, you know, for a younger generation, to them, you know, musicals didn't start until Hamilton came along.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything before that is something they're really not interested in. So it, you know, I've shown them clips of Ethel Merman. I've shown them clips of Fred Astaire. They just sort of look at me blankly. But this performance always makes them stand up and pay attention and then want to know more about this performer. Because I think the song that we're going to play is a perfect marriage of the performer and the musicianship of the song. And that is the great Barbara Cook from Follies in Concert, 1985. And this is her singing In Buddy's Eyes by Stephen Sondheim. And Sondheim said, you know, to him, there was no greater interpreter of his work than Barbara Cook. And I think it really shows here. And one of my greatest joy is always playing this clip in class to a bunch of people that look so bored most of the time, to then watch them elevate to want to learn more about how this performer is doing what they do. And to me, there's nothing better than that. And so this is the great Barbara Cook with In Buddy's Eyes from Follies.
Life is slow, but it seems exciting, 'cause Buddy's there. Gourmet cooking and letter writing, and knowing Buddy's there. Every morning, don't faint, I tend the flowers. Can you believe it? Every weekend, I paint for umpteen hours. And yes, I miss a lot living like a shot in. No, I haven't got cooks and cars and diamonds. Yes, my clothes are not Paris fashions, but in Buddy's eyes, I'm young, I'm beautiful. In Buddy's eyes, I don't get older. So life is ducky and time goes flying, and I'm so lucky I feel like crying.
Buddy's arms.
Well, I have to say that you didn't fail me. Every single person who has ever put together their 12 list always has a Sondheim song on their good list. So I was pleased to see you kept that going. And it's not surprising that you had a Barbara Cook song, because almost everybody has a Barbara Cook. For anybody who is not that familiar with Barbara Cook, which I think most people are who listen to the show, she's like one of the greatest interpreters of Sondheim, of almost any American songbook standard. Her career was quite amazing to follow.
Yeah.
Starting out as the ingenue soprano in musical theater and having a very kind of ups and downs of her life and her career before she became a huge star of concerts and cabarets and one of the things that somebody had pointed out to me, which I had kind of forgotten and didn't realize, is that if you kind of go back to the very early years of her career and you go back to, you know, the years where she won her Tony Award for The Music Man, that was the same year that Sondheim was up in West Side Story, same season. Here she was, the young soprano ingenue playing Marion the Librarian in the Tony Award-winning Music Man, which defeated West Side Story for Best Musical. And all those many decades later, she becomes the Sondheim muse, so to speak. You know, all these many years later, she becomes the one person that Sondheim, you know, it's interesting how their paths cross again all those decades later. And she's totally on the Sondheim camp by that point.
I never thought of that.
I hadn't thought of that either, but it was sort of like, that's kind of where she was back in the late 50s. She was, you know, the young ingenue soprano. And she was, if you go back and listen to her in the late 50s, she was amazing soprano, just amazing, amazing musical theater soprano. Anyway, but that's it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and she kept her gift for quite a long time through a lot of personal issues. You know, there really should not have been a voice left in her. And I think she just got better with age.
Yes, absolutely. I think she learned how, even as she aged, as a lot of singers age, and they don't necessarily take care of their voice, or they don't learn to adapt their voice to the style of singing. She learned how to adapt her voice to the point where I think, you know, her last Tony nomination was for Sondheim on Sondheim.
Yeah.
You know, the review. So it's an amazing career.
Can I tell you a story about her really quickly?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I don't want to
overpay
my welcome, but I don't know if you knew this. After she had done Sondheim on Sondheim, there was an idea of, can we do a one woman show of her, like they did with Bea Arthur and Elaine Stritch and all that stuff. And so they were going to do it. I think Tommy Toon was directing it and James Lapine was going to write it for her. And they got to her house and she's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to move during the show, because she had, you know, she was older and she had some weight. And so she was a little bit more immobile. And she goes, but I don't want it to be static. So they had this idea that she would be in a chair and the chair was on a lift. And so the chair could like lift itself up and go to like different places on the stage, so she never had to move. I think she tested like a sample of it and fell out of the chair. And after that, they were like, we're not doing this show.
God.
So. God. No. But I just would love to have seen her floating from place to place.
It would have been like an Elphaba moment.
Like an Elphaba moment. That's actually genius. Hey, listen, I would have seen her Glinda. Her Glinda with Ethel Merman's Elphaba. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's golden age glory.
That is golden age glory. So we're now halfway through Rob Schneider's 12 favorite show tunes. So we'll take a quick little break to talk about Queer Musicals, the book he has written as part of the Essential Musicals series. It has been out. So how has the feedback been? What have you been hearing?
You know, I've been so lucky. The feedback has been really, really positive. And the thing that excites me more than anything is I'm getting a lot of messages and emails from people saying, I never knew about this show. I'm going to see if I can get it done at my local regional theater.
Oh, wow.
Or, I didn't know that there was a song that covered this in the show. I can't wait to like learn that myself. So That's actually kind of was the goal of the book, was to just introduce people to the wealth of material that was out there. And so far, that seems to be working pretty well. And that makes me really, really happy. And I've also, the other nice thing is I've heard from a lot of like queer historians, people that don't do theater, you know, they just study that as their main topic of focus. And they have been really, really complimentary about how we've encapsulated the struggles of the queer community against what the media was at the time. So I'm feeling very good. But I always say the same thing, Donald. If anyone read it and was like, what? I don't like this. This was not good. Please slide into my DMs and let me know why. So that way, if we do a second edition, we can make improvements. So it's about the students and it's about the readers who are going to learn. So anything we can do to help improve that, I'm game for. So friends, chime in if you need to.
Right. And I also would say, I hope that the publishers are also looking at the fact that the book not only belongs in places like the drama bookshop in New York and in, you know, theater bookshops, but also belongs in gay and lesbian bookshops. You know, it's more than just a theater book. It's a Wait. Queer cultural book.
Oh, Donald, bless your heart. That really means the world to me. And it's starting to appear in like queer focused bookstores that don't have.
Oh, good.
Any sort of theater. Yeah. So a friend of mine down in Australia, there's a major bookstore down there that only deals in queer publication. I believe it's in Sydney. The book is there and the book is on display in the window. So
oh, wonderful.
That makes me so happy because. Yeah. That's going to be a whole new demographic of people who might not have enjoyed musicals before that might pick up the book and love it and go see a musical. And that makes me really happy.
Maybe they will send you down to Australia for a book signing.
Hey, listen, I would love that. I would love that. Right now, I just sign them in my apartment and send them out to anybody who wants.
Well, I would love a signed copy.
Oh, are you kidding? Once this is over, send me your address. I'm sending one your way.
I would love a signed copy to add to my library of books. So,
I love
that. Oh, so let's jump back into your list. We're doing Rob Schneider's 12 favorite show tunes. We have been through 6 of them. We have 6 more to go. What is next on your list?
Well, this next one, people are always like, are you lying to me? And then I have to show them, no, I'm being accurate. This is the number one song that is played in my music list, you know, and I'm always like, this is song number one. And it's Penny in My Pocket from the revival of Hello Dolly, because I thought I knew Hello Dolly pretty well. And this was a song that they wrote for Vandegelder. It was supposed to actually end the first act instead of before the parade passes by. And they cut it because they're like, who wants to spend time with him before the end of the first act? They want to spend time with Dolly. But when David Hyde Pierce signed on to do the revival, they decided they needed to give him another number. They dug this number out of the trunk and he did it in one. He stood in front of a curtain and delivered this hysterical song that traces the history of how this guy went from nothing to something. But it also taught you why money was so important to him.
Right.
And that is something, if you don't have that song, you don't really understand. He just looks like an old curmudgeonly miser. And it's done so beautifully. And David did it. David knocked it out of the park. But I remember sitting there with a huge smile on my face because it was that sense of discovery of what is this amazing song that I thought I knew everything about this show. And so happy, pleasant surprise to me. So this is from the revival of Hello Dolly, the musical, Jerry Herman. And the song is called Penny in My Pocket. And it's sung by the great David Hyde Pierce.
I put a penny in my pocket.
And in a little time, that penny in my pocket had grown into a dime. And in a little longer, a quarter jingled out. I put the quarter in the teapot and I waited till the teapot had a dollar in the spout. I put the dollar in my mattress and had some pleasant dreams. Till suddenly my mattress was bursting at the seams. And that's how I acquired the wealth I now possess. That little penny was the secret. Yes, that penny was the secret of my success. I had a penny in my pocket and not another sou. And with my only shite tail, I shined a rich man's shoe. He threw me down a nickel admiring my skill. I gave the nickel to a blind man, and the blind man left me all his meager savings in his will. I bought myself a wagon for hauling blocks of ice. I cut the ice to ice cubes and got a higher price. I shaved the ice to ices for still a higher fee. A big tycoon said, very enterprising in your organizing, son, you must come work for me. En route to work next morning, I helped a lady cross. The lady was, you guessed it, the mother of the boss. The boss said, you're promoted, I need you at my side. And then I met the boss's daughter, and I wed the boss's daughter, and quite suddenly she died. I bought myself an acre, a silo and a steed. All Yonkers started buying my grain and hay and feed. And now I've half a million, but proudly I confess that in my pocket is that penny, yes, that shiny little penny. It's that penny that's the secret of my success.
I agree with you in the sense that it's a song that provides the third dimension to what ultimately had always been a kind of a two-dimensional character.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Horace had always been kind of this cardboard cutout stereotype.
Yeah.
Of this kind of this miserly buffoon type character who he doesn't have a whole lot of dimension to him. He's always played by a great character actor, and he's funny, and he's the villain for part of the show, and he's blustery, and he's loud, but you never really understand him. He doesn't have, you don't get to see any further dimension to him. And this song gives him dimension. And it's unfortunate that they decided to cut it. I mean, it's instead of finding a new place for it in the show, they just cut it.
Yeah.
And having seen the revival, I then sat and agreed with you because I was like, it may not have belonged at the end of the first act, but it belonged somewhere.
Yeah, you know, honestly, if you were like, it has to be between It Takes a Woman and Penny in My Pocket, I would probably say let's go with Penny in My Pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a way of introducing him. The only thing I want to direct this show so bad someday, and the only thing I would love to do is he has this great lyric in here about that that he met the boss's daughter, then he wed the boss's daughter, and quite suddenly she died. And then usually there's a big laugh there. I think it's actually probably a little bit more tender. I think he actually was really in love with her. Mm-hmm. And that's how he's always viewed this particular, the penny led to him finding her. And so when he gives the penny at the end to Dolly, it feels like he's ready to let go of that past relationship.
Right. So, and that's why I agree with you, because to me, when I saw the show, I saw that as a parallel to Dolly and the sign from Ephraim.
Yes. Yes.
To me, they're parallel symbols of her ability to now move on, because she gets the sign from Ephraim and he gets the penny sign. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I felt they were parallels with the two characters.
I agree with you. And I mean, the revival was so funny. And I just wish they would have just taken that moment to give him just a little bit of vulnerability instead of going for the laugh. But I get it. I totally get it. Different visions.
Yep. So what's next?
Oh, this is a show that came out a few years after Hello, Dolly! Did. It is a song that I will never forget. This is a personal one for me. When I started falling in love with musical theater, I used to go to a used record store in Los Angeles, and I would just grab whatever cast recordings.
And which used record store was this?
It was actually called Used Records.
Oh, was it really? Okay.
It was a mom and pop in my hometown of Thousand Oaks, California.
Uh-huh.
And I would scour, and there wasn't a big collection, I would scour the original cast recordings. And there was an album for something, and it looked so intriguing to me. It was like a key with three women hanging off of a key. So what is this? So I bought it, and of course it was Promises, Promises.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, first of all, the show revolutionized what sound could do on Broadway, you know, the including of the electronic instruments and the pit singers and stuff. But there was a moment in this, I remember listening to the album for the first time, and it got to Jerry Orbach singing She Likes Basketball. And I remember listening to it, and I was very, you know, a young musical theater person at that time. And I immediately put the needle back on it. And I did it again and again and again and again, because I could not get over the fact that you could write an amazing song about something so mundane, which is, it's just a shared hobby. It's just a shared hobby. But in musical theater land, a shared hobby can mean so much more. And that was, I don't know, for me, that was such a big light bulb moment that, you know, if you have, if it's in the right hands, any moment could be musicalized appropriately. So for me, She Likes Basketball, so it might not be the best song ever written, or, and he might not be the greatest singer that ever lived, but you don't care. You just don't care because the joy is palpable. The joy is palpable. So I would love to play She Likes Basketball, sung by the great Jerry Orbach, to bring me back to my youth, if that's okay, from so many moons ago.
That's perfectly fine. So here it is right now from Promises, Promises, Jerry Orbach doing She Likes Basketball.
She likes basketball. How about that? We have something in common to talk about. Basketball. She likes basketball. How about that? I have some place to take her when we go out. Basketball! Whoever would have dreamed, never would have thought that my favorite girl liked my favorite sport. Like any other kid, I would make believe with a ball in my hand. I'd dribble right past all the others real fast, and I'd be 6'8", and my jump shot was really great. She likes basketball, isn't that wild? It's an omen that good things are on their way. Things to share. We share basketball, couldn't you die? From a simple beginning like this, we may get somewhere. It's nice to dream someday it might be basketball and me. Whoever would have dreamed, never would have thought that my favorite girl liked my favorite sport. Like any other kid, I would make believe with a ball in my hand. I'd dribble right past all the others real fast, and I'd be 6'8", and my jump shot was really great. She likes basketball, isn't that wild? It's an omen that good things are on their way. Things to share. We share basketball, couldn't you die? From a simple beginning like this, we may get somewhere. It's nice to dream someday it might be basketball.
So where are we going next?
We're going to one of the funniest comedic performances ever captured on an album. This is from the 1992 revival of Guys and Dolls. This is the song Sue Me, sung by the great Nathan Lane and the great Faith Prince, who won a Tony Award for her performance as Miss Adelaide. And what I love about this song is it's so clear the way that Nathan Lane and Faith Prince and the director Jerry Zaks have structured this song. It is such a clear three-act play. And I encourage people, if you get the chance, go onto YouTube, because there's a recording of them doing it on The Tonight Show.
Oh, okay.
And you can actually see how brilliant they were physically. But what I love about this song specifically, because I'm a director, so I just kind of love this story, is one day during the rehearsals for the revival of Guys and Dolls, Jerry Zaks, the director, called the entire cast early, and he sat them all down in the audience. He said, "I want you to watch something." And he showed them Nathan and Faith doing Sue Me. And at the end, he said, "This is the tone of the show. You all need to copy that tone." And I think that this really comes through in this. It's kind of a quote unquote throwaway song. But what they do with it is they elevate it into places I don't think anyone ever thought it could go before. So this is the great Nathan Lane. Faith Prince won a Tony for this. This is the 1992 revival of Frank Lesser's Guys and Dolls. The song is Sue Me.
Nathan, why can't we elope right now?
Because, well, I gotta go to a prayer meeting.
Nathan, this is the biggest lie you ever told me!
But I promise you it's true!
You promise me this, you promise me that, you promise me anything under the sun, and you give me a kiss, and you're grabbing your hat, and you're off to the races again. When I think of the time gone by,
Adelaide.
When I think of the way I tried,
Adelaide.
I could honestly die.
Call a lawyer and sue me, sue me. What can you do me? I love you. Give a holler and hate me. Hate me. Go ahead, hate me.
The I best love years you. Of my life, I was a fool to give to
all
you.
Right already, I'm just a no-good nick. All right already, it's true. So new. So sue me, sue me. What can you do me? I love you.
You gamble it here, you gamble it there, you gamble on everything all except me, and I'm sick of you keeping me up at the edge. You're back in the money again when I think of the time gone by.
Adelaide.
I don't think of the way I'm
Adelaide!
I could honestly die.
Serve a paper and sue me, sue me. What can you do me? I love you. Give a holler and hate me, hate me. Go ahead, hate me.
When
I
you
love
wind
you.
Up in jail, don't come to me to bail you.
Right. Already, so call a policeman. All right, already, it's true. So new, so sue me, sue me. What can you do me? I love
you're
you.
You're at it again. You're running the game. I'm not gonna play second fiddle to that. And I'm sick and I'm tired of strolling around. I'm telling you now that we're through. When I think of the time gone by.
Adelaide.
And I think of the way I try.
Adelaide.
I could honestly die.
Sue me. Sue me. Shoot bullets through me. I love you.
You just heard Faith Prince and Nathan Lane doing Sue Me from Guys and Dolls, two of the absolute masters of comedy from Broadway, Faith and Nathan. And I remember that season because I had seen Faith in Nick and Nora.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yes. Before, because yeah. That was earlier the same season she was doing.
Yeah.
And I remember I had never seen Faith on stage.
Yeah.
When I saw Nick and Nora. And I remember being in the men's room at intermission and people were standing around going, I have no idea what this show is about. And I have no idea what's going on in this musical. But everyone loved her. They were like, who is this woman playing Lorraine? Oh my God, she is hysterically funny. She's walking away with the show. And then sure enough, the show closed after like 9 performances. And then she immediately landed Adelaide in Guys and Dolls and won a Tony Award. It's the exact same season.
Oh, I love it. Good for her. Yes. She deserves it.
Yeah. So where are we going next?
Oh, this is, it's a guilty pleasure. But to me, musical theater is about optimism. Mm-hmm. And it was Mel Brooks who said, a good musical can blow the dust off your soul. And to me, this next song, I think, is a really great example of those two things. One, I hope the dust gets blown off your soul, but also I hope you can hear the overriding optimism in this. This is actually Marvin Hamlisch, Carol Bayer-Sager, their 1979 musical. They're playing our song. This song is the last song that Sonia, our lead character, sings. She's had a really, really tough love life, and she's just been dumped once again. And she sings a song about how tomorrow is another day and there might be new love around the corner. And this is the great Lucy Arnaz singing I Still Believe in Love from Marvin Hamlisch, Carol Bayer-Sager's They're Playing Our Song.
After all the tears I've cried, you'd think I would give up on love, get off this line. Maybe I might get it right this time. I was there as passion turned to pain, sunshine turned to rainy days. Here I am, ready to begin once again. All my life I've been a dreamer, dreaming dreams that always broke in two. But I still content with who I am. I'm reaching out my hand to him once again. At least I know I've made myself a friend. All my life I've been a dreamer, dreaming dreams that never quite came true. But I still believe in love, and love believing. I'll keep on dreaming, because I still believe in love. I still believe in love. And me and you, I still believe in love.
So that's Lucy Arnaz from They're Playing Our Song. And I have a question for you. Do you think the show is revivable? I've always wondered, because it doesn't get produced much anymore. And I'm wondering, the answer I always hear is, oh, it's too dated. It's not. And I'm like, can it be updated? Can it not be updated?
Honestly, I genuinely think this could be updated. I think you just have to provide a couple more modern references, but it's about people that start off as colleagues and end up falling in love with each other. I mean, if you can revive She Loves Me,
right?
You can revive this.
I mean, I guess the question is, do you either have to make a decision to keep it as a period piece and keep the orchestrations and keep the sound the way it is, or you have to decide you're going to do a revival that's revised to modernize it to present day and change some of the story a little bit in terms of what they do. I mean, they're basically songwriters. So
yeah, I mean,
still are songwriters, but you just have to change the orchestrations and change some things. Yeah.
I mean, I think you could honestly go either way. The material is strong enough that I think it could withstand saying, hey, we're doing it as a period piece, or let's try to modernize it. A friend of mine had an idea a while back of making it a gay couple, that it was about two gay songwriters and putting that twist on it. I will say I would assume that if anything were to be done, the Neil Simon estate would want to keep it in its period. Right. Don't ask me how I know this. I'm just telling you.
Oh, okay. That sounded like a knowledgeable comment.
I have tried to do this show at my theater company for years.
Ah, okay.
They turn me down every year because they're like, oh, a revival is coming in with, and they mention a real life married couple that does musicals. And I'm like, well, those people would have been great in this show 30 years ago. Like,
okay.
Now they're grandparents.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily see these two individuals doing this anytime soon. But okay, hey,
hope
springs eternal.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's the eternal is the name of the old age home where those people probably will be any day now.
It really is. I was like, how are they going to dance? Never mind.
Okay. 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 Moving on.
Yes.
Where are we going next? We have two more to go. So what do we have next?
I wanted to make sure I had included a song from a show that was in the book Queer Musicals. And I wanted to include a song that I find so funny, so celebratory, so joyous. And that is The Prom. The musical is The Prom. And the song is called Barry is Going to Prom, in which an adult man who his entire life was an outcast and didn't get to go to his own prom finally has the opportunity to go. And Brooks Ashmanskis, who played Barry, is one of the most brilliant performances I've ever seen in my life. And when you listen to this, the joy of the show is palpable. And his joy of realizing that his dreams are finally coming true and that there is no age limit on dreams is wonderful. And Chad Burgoyne and Matthew Sklar, who did the score, encapsulate all of this perfectly. So I think let's celebrate with Barry. Barry is going to prom. Brooks Ashmanskis. Here we go.
I'm oddly excited. Perhaps that's because, although it shouldn't matter, it somehow does. It's strange, but I feel like I'm in a time machine. 'Cause guess what? It's like I'm suddenly 17. So book a white limo, uncork the dom. After 29 years, I am finally going to prom. I once thought a night like this wasn't in the cards. Now I've got a date, a tux, and the whole nine yards. A rational person would just stay calm. Oh, since when am I rational? Barry is going to prom. I wish I could tell that sad kid I was to stop crying into his Cheetos. They say it gets better, guess what it does? Who cares if you're a big old girl? Just get into that gym and twirl. Barry's going to the... to the freaking prom! Going to the prom. In showbiz, I never felt such a thrill divine. My date is a high school lesbian, still it's fine. And though it's been years, I might call my mom and tell her that though it's overdue, all of my waiting is over too. And if you're not happy, I'm over you, 'cause Barry, yes, Barry. Look at me, Mom, Barry's going to...
You just heard a song from The Prom. Barry is Going to Prom, one of my favorite musicals and scores, yes. From a show that didn't last as long as I was hoping it would. And I think it's a show that hopefully will have a long life in regional theater.
I think it will. I think it will. I you know,
it's a perfect musical for high schools and colleges.
Oh my gosh,
to do.
Yeah.
It's perfect because of the cast and the message. And it's just terrific.
And so many high schools are doing it now. And it makes me so happy because I don't think when I was in high school, we would have ever done a show like this at all.
Right.
And the fact that there's just such a display of, you know, identity on stage now and the kids are all cool with it. I don't know. It just warms my heart.
Even though the movie adaptation wasn't quite good.
Correct.
Quite good. Correct. But we have one more to go. Of your 12 favorites. And this is one that actually had a good movie adaptation.
Yeah, great movie adaptation.
Yeah, even though the release version was not the intended release version, at least the ending.
Okay, still works.
But it still works. So where are we going for your last pick or your 12 favorite show tunes?
Oh, I just think the joy just seems to be a motif today in this particular set list. This is from the movie musical Little Shop of Horrors, the movie version of the musical Little Shop of Horrors, which starred the great Rick Moranis and Ellen Green reprising her role from the off-Broadway show. How rare is that, you know, to have the theater actor come in and play the role? And this is Suddenly Seymour, in which two characters at the same time realize that the other one can make their dreams come true. And there is nothing to me more beautiful than seeing these two individuals form this union together after have waiting for it for so long. She's adorable. He's adorable. Howard Ashman's lyrics, Alan Menken's music, all of it is a perfect combination. So if you ask me what is the perfect duet, it is Suddenly Seymour. And yes, there's background vocals, but to me, it's still a duet. So to end, this is Rick Moranis and Ellen Green. No offense to Lee Wilcoff on the original recording, but this is Rick Moranis and Ellen Green singing Suddenly Seymour from the movie version of Little Shop of Horrors.
Lift up your head, wash off your mascara. Here, take my Kleenex, wipe that lipstick away. Show me your face, clean as the morning. I know things were bad, but now they're okay. Suddenly Seymour is standing beside you. You don't need no makeup, don't have to pretend. Suddenly Seymour is here to provide you sweet understanding. Seymour's your friend.
Nobody ever treated me kindly. Daddy left early, Mama was poor. I'd meet a man and I'd follow him blindly. He'd snap his fingers at me, I'd say sure. Suddenly give me your eyes, you don't care this end. Suddenly Seymour is here to provide me sweet understanding. Seymour's my
tell me this feeling lasts till forever. Tell me the bad times are clean washed away.
Please understand that it's still strange and frightening for losers like I've been. It's so hard to say. Suddenly Seymour.
Suddenly Seymour.
We just heard Rick Moranis and Ellen Green. Rick Moranis, who is finally back to making movies after taking a long break, thank God, from Little Shop of Horrors with Suddenly Seymour. And a show that has had such an interesting life, you know, an off-Broadway, fantastic off-Broadway run, and then attempted to bring it to Broadway where it did okay, but is now back off Broadway and is going like gangbusters off Broadway. How long has that off Broadway production been running?
Is it five years now? I think it might be 5 years.
Yeah, it's crazy that that production is still going. It just is amazing to me.
I thought, this is going to come in for like a couple of months at most, and then it goes away. This thing's been going on forever and ever. It's a fantastic production,
right?
They've marketed it really, really, really well. So I'm sure in a few more years it'll still be playing there, which makes me happy.
Well, we have just heard Rob Schneider's 12 favorite show tunes as of today. He'll be back tomorrow to do his 12 favorite show tunes tomorrow. which will be a whole different list.
Absolutely.
Yes, Rob will be back every week with his 12 favorite show tunes.
Great.
his ever-changing moods of 12 favorite show tunes. Anyway, thank you, Rob. I greatly appreciate you putting together this list. And I want to remind everyone to pick up your copy of Queer Musicals. They can find it anywhere you buy your books. Amazon, they can find it at Bloomsbury Publishing. It is part of their Essential Musicals series that you definitely need to pick up. You should also check out your local booksellers, and they hopefully will be carrying it. If they don't, make sure you bug them so that they do carry it. They should be carrying all of the Essential Musicals series. There are 3 books out now, and there are more coming in the new year. They're a wonderful set of books to start collecting if you're a musical theater fan. In any case, thank you, Rob. Do a little plug also for your theater company.
Oh, well, first of all, thank you, Donald. I am. My theater company is called the J2 Spotlight Musical Theater Company. It's a long name, but we're worth it. It's off Broadway, and we present in 6 weeks 3 musicals that we feel deserve to be seen again. Fully produced, fully designed, fully directed, with really great names attached. And so, if you're in the New York City area anytime between April and May, please come join us. You can find out more information about us at J2SpotlightNYC.com. Once again, that is J2SpotlightNYC.com. And we offer a great deal, for $160, that's a season ticket. So for $160, you get to see 3 shows.
That's great. And what are the 3 shows that were picked for this season?
We're going to start off with Jerry Herman's Milk and Honey.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're moving to Rodgers and Sondheim's Do I Hear a Waltz?
Mm-hmm.
And as of this recording, we are still trying to figure out our 3rd show because we're waiting on a licensing thing. But we hope that the 3rd show is going to be My Favorite Year.
Cool.
In a new version that Aarons and Flaherty are working on. Okay. So all good.
Terrific. Well, thanks again, Rob.
Yeah.
It's been a joy chatting with you again. Happy holidays. And hopefully we will see you again in the new year.
Thank you, Donald. It was an absolute pleasure. Happy holidays, everybody.